October 22nd, 2012, in Vrindavan. Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 15, Part 1. Well, we are now in a new phase of the Nectar of Devotion. And welcome to our guests, visitors. Hi, Krishna. So it's a little funny because we're doing chapter 15 today, and then we have a two-day break, and then we'll be doing chapter 16, because really chapter 15 and chapter 16 they go together. In one sense, they should be taught together. So 15 and 16 deal with Raghunuga Bhakti in general, and then there's two chapters on... Do you need something? Then there's two chapters on bhava and one chapter on prema. Now, Srila Prabhupada translates these verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, to which Srila Prabhupada is referring here in these chapters. He also translates in Chaitanya Charitamrita, translates in the Madhya Lila chapter 22, 150, 152, and 154. And there in Srila Prabhupada's translation in Madhya Lila, he uses the same terminology that Rupa Goswami uses, whereas here in Nectar Devotion, it's not. So our assumption at this point is that it was a mistake of the transcriber, because Nectar Devotion was, of course, produced very early in the Hare Krishna movement. It was one of our earliest books. And so we're assuming that the devotee just didn't hear it properly. So there's really three terms: Ragatmika, Raga, and Raghunuga. So, and here in this chapter, as it says, they're merged. But because in other places Srila Prabhupada does it in the way Rupa Goswami did it, again, we're assuming that here was an editorial mistake. So like in your question bank, it's going to ask you questions based on Rupa Goswami's use of the words and not the way they're used in this chapter. So that's something important to know, because if in your essays, like on your question bank for this chapter, it'll say define Ragatmika Bhakti, define Raga. So, but that's not going to be the way it's written in this chapter, so you want to make a note of that. So Ragatmika Bhakti is the spontaneous devotion that's exhibited by perfected souls in this, you know, this world or in the spiritual world. And it's distinguished particularly from reverential devotion that's shown in Vaikuntha. There's not a sense of duty. As Prabhupada's saying here, he gives the example of the cowherd boys.
Do you really think Kundalini's devotion is exhibited
by the residents of the spiritual world who are in Vrindavan or Dwarka or Mathura, but not in Vaikuntha? So you don't find this Ragatmika Bhakti in Vaikuntha. You find it in Goloka Vrindavan. And Prabhupada gives here the example of the cowherd boys. So here's the definition of raga: spontaneous attraction for something while completely absorbed in thoughts of it with an intense desire of love. So we all have, of course, some material experience of this, not perhaps completely, but we have some material experience of this, don't we? Have you ever felt just naturally attracted to something while being completely absorbed in it? Maybe there wasn't love, but you got the first two. Everybody's had that? Yes? I mean, I know it was a particularly heavy lunch today with all the lovely sweets, but... So we've had this. We've been absorbed in something. Maybe you've been absorbed in a new car, or maybe you've been absorbed in, you know, are you going to get your visa, or you're absorbed in something that's taking up all of your thoughts. Completely absorbed in those thoughts. And just very, you know, you have some natural attraction to it. And one can be attracted in lust, fear, envy, service, affection, or kinship. So we all have some idea materially of what this means. And it's a spontaneous thing. You know, if you're worried about your visa, or you want to get a new car, or you're attracted to some person or something, it just happens on its own accord. You don't sit down and say, well, I'm just going to meditate now all the time on whether or not to get my visa. You just do, right? It just happens. Even if you try to push it out of your mind, you can't. It just keeps coming back. You may dream about it. You may be in various circumstances, but it doesn't matter where you are. You can be sitting here in the Bhakti Shastri class, you can be chanting your japa, you can be walking down the street, you can be going to holy places, you can be talking to other people, and still your consciousness is absorbed just spontaneously in something that you have some strong attraction to. So everybody's had this experience. Yes. And we also had this experience. We talked before. I know especially we were talking in the Bhakti Vaibhava class. I believe we also talked about it in this class. The difference between mechanical samadhi and the samadhi of love. Did we talk about that here? No? Okay, so mechanical samadhi, I think we talked about it when we talked about the stages of meditation, for sure. When we were talking about the brahmana who burnt his finger in the sweet rice, and I showed you the stages of meditation from Nectar of Instruction, Text 8 in Jivadharma. So there's a kind of mechanical samadhi where a person, just by doing certain breathing and putting their body in a certain posture, especially if they're also eating in a particular way, living in a particular way, that their body just goes into a kind of trance. And anyone can learn this. Even Prabhupada talks about how Stalin could do this. So you don't even have to be a pious person. Stalin was not a pious person. Was Stalin a pious person?
No.
No, definitely not. I think that pretty much most people would agree he was a very evil person. But he was capable of putting his mind into a mechanical kind of samadhi so that he had surgery without pain. Srila Prabhupada gives this example, teachings of Lord Kapila. So the Astanga Yoga system is meant to achieve that kind of samadhi. Prabhupada calls that lifeless yoga. Of course, interesting, in relationship, that's in the third canto, in relationship to that brahmana, Prabhupada talks about how first he would put himself into a mechanical samadhi. And he said in those days everybody knew how to do that. The common person knew how to do that. But the kind of samadhi we're looking for is the sort of samadhi that happens naturally when you're attracted. And you can see how all of us are looking for that. It's like, why do people get absorbed in stories? Why do people read books or watch dramas or watch movies? You become just absorbed. I'm sure we've all had this experience. You just become absorbed. You forget everything else. You don't remember what time it is or who you are or where you are or what's going on. You're just absorbed in that story. And people are looking, or with sporting activities also. You see people who are watching sporting activities or playing sports. And actually it's quite interesting, the people who study motivation, which was the main topic of my thesis. So the people who study motivation, they call it flow. There's a very famous academic, Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, and he coined this word flow. That when you're working, but your work is like play. When you're so absorbed in your work, it feels like play, and you lose a sense of time and space, and you're completely absorbed. He's talking about a kind of samadhi. You become one-pointed. In the Astanga Yoga system, before samadhi is pratyahara, that the senses become inert and you become fixed internally on one point. So if you think about it, you'll see that people are looking for that in their life. They're looking for something that will absorb them completely, absorb their attraction, and be able to let them forget about everything else in life. And we are looking for this through love. So the karma yogis, they're trying to find this simply by giving up the desire for heaven. The jnana yogis through philosophy. The dhyana yogis through a mechanical process. And we're trying to do it naturally by falling in love with Krishna. Do you remember the last chapter? Remember anybody? Remember the very beginning of the last chapter? That these five processes are so powerful that even a slight blank for them can arouse ecstasy even in a neophyte. Attachment. An attachment for them. And what was Srila Prabhupada's most often quoted verse? Yes, 7-1. Maya Shaktam Anavartam. Ashakti. So definitely one of my favorite lectures of Srila Prabhupada. I don't even know how many times I've listened to it. So many times. At least dozens, if not over, well over 100. Prabhupada gave on 7-1 in India, Sanan, India. And he said, everyone knows what is this attachment. We all know. We all have been attached to something or are attached to something. We've all had an experience like this. Maybe we're experiencing this now. Maybe there's something now in our lives. And just turn that to Krishna. So a Raghavika devotee is one who has this kind of attachment and attraction for Krishna. Now, materially, attachments and attractions are not satisfying. You reach a point where you just say, it's just not so attractive anymore. Did we talk about satiation but not satisfaction?
Yes.
So with material things, you get satiated but you don't get satisfied. When you're attached to Krishna, you get satisfied but not satiated. So the Raghavika devotees, they're totally in love with Krishna, and what's motivating them is that love. They're not motivated by duty, they're not motivated by shastra, they're not motivated by any other desire. The residents of Vaikuntha, they don't have any selfish motives, but they're motivated by duty and by reverence. And they have some desire for the liberations. Now those are considered spiritual desires, but they have some desires for the liberations. To live on the same planet, to share the same opulences, to have the same form, and so forth. So therefore, it's not considered raghavika. What's pushing them, what's motivating them, is not just pure attraction. So then, Rupa Goswami, and of course Srila Prabhupada also, is quoting Narada Muni about the different categories of attraction. And he talks about lust, fear, envy, service, affection, and kinship. Of course, there's a nice verse also in the Brahma Samhita. Does anybody know that verse in the Brahma Samhita? It talks about this. It starts with Yam Krodha. Sajapanyadi Bhitti. Fatsalya Moha Guru Gora Vasevi Bhava. Sanchinja Chasram Sarvisim Tanimapurete. Govinda Manipuru Shantam Amajam. So if any emotion, and we talked about this before, I believe, how the people think, well, let me kill my emotions and come to just neutrality. That is the way of the yoga ladder. That is not the way of bhakti. What happens if you try to kill your emotions? Do you become?
Dead.
Hard-hearted or mad. Or you're dead. Yeah. It's not our process. Although I know so many devotees who think that is our process. It's not. Our process is to take our emotions and turn them to Krishna. Prabhupada says so nicely, we're already attached to so many things. Just instead become attached to Krishna. And what we're attached to in so many things is actually Krishna. What's captivating us. Just like if we're attached to another person, what captivates us in that person is the soul. And Krishna is the soul of the soul. What we're really being captivated by is Krishna. Anything. Krishna lists in the Bhagavad Gita so many things. In which chapters does Krishna list in the Bhagavad Gita where you can see him in this world? 10? And?
7.
7? And?
9.
9? Such a scholar. We have two scholars. There are two scholars here. And? Seven, nine, ten, and? One more. Come on, you just studied it. No, good guess. You just studied 15. It. Thank you, 15. Did someone tell you?
No.
Oh, you have this funny look on your face. Someone slipped you the answer. So also in 15. So whatever we're attracted to, Krishna's the light of the sun. We're attracted to things that are light. Krishna's the life of all that lives. He's fragrance. So what it's very easy. Just think about, why am I attached to this something? And you'll find that what you're really attached to is Krishna. So why not just get attached to Krishna? He's the reservoir of all pleasure. So you can take the same emotions. We're not trying to first kill the material emotions, become neutral, and then get spiritual emotions. I know I keep saying this, but see it all the time. You know, the impersonal way is, okay, I take my material emotions, I make them zero, and then when I'm at zero, then I awaken the spiritual emotions. That's not our process. Our process is like this. The impersonalists are like this. And we're like this. You see this very nicely in Madhurya Kadambini, where Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is talking about, we have a nice chart on this, if anybody wants to get that from me electronically, I can send it to you. So that as the material consciousness decreases, the spiritual consciousness increases, gradually and proportionally. And I think I gave the example also, like you have a handful of plastic pearls. Did I give that example here? And you take a real pearl, you put it in your hand, it knocks out a plastic pearl. You take another real pearl, you put it in your hand, it knocks out. Pretty soon, your hand is full of real pearls. So the impersonalists, they take all the plastic pearls and they try to get rid of all of them and have an empty hand. And then they try to fill it up with pearls. But that's very hard because they get attached to having an empty hand. First of all, it's very hard to empty your hand. And then they get attached to having an empty hand. So we want to replace. We lust after things in this world. We fear things in this world. We envy things in this world. We have an attitude of service and affection and kinship. Just simply replace that with Krishna. So that's all. I mean, it really, Prabhupada says so many times, what is the difficulty? Simple for the simple. So please do not think, on one hand we're going to talk about Raga Yuga Bhakti as something that's very elevated, and it is very elevated. It's not cheap. You can't just imitate it. You can't just fake it. You can't just go around dressed up like a gopi and perhaps you pretend Ras Lila in the middle of Seva Kunja night. You can't fake it. It's not cheap. But it is also what we're already naturally doing. And it's something that even a beginner, didn't we just read that? What was that again? The last chapter? That these five are so potent that a little attachment for them can arouse what? What? Oh, look at your books then. Come on, look. Look, look, look. It's so wonderful. You should know this. Page 109. First paragraph. End of the first paragraph. What does it say? Five kinds of devotional activities are so potent that a... What does it say? Read it. Read it. Come on. Read, read, read. 109. B, 109. Yes. Why don't we read this whole first paragraph together? Everybody together. Rupa Goswami has stated that five kinds of devotional activities, namely residing in Mathura, worshipping the deity of the Lord, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, serving a devotee, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra are so potent that a small attachment for any one of these five items can arouse devotional ecstasy even in a neophyte. Even in a what?
Neophyte.
Can arouse what? Ecstasy. How much attachment?
Little.
Little. Small attachment. A small, for how many of them? All five, right? How many?
One.
A small attachment for one can arouse devotional ecstasy even in a neophyte. So please do not think, I'm such a neophyte, I cannot be attached to Krishna. Many years ago, I was here in Krishna Balaram temple, standing by Krishna Balaram's altar. I forget who was standing next to me. And I said, look how handsome Krishna is. And she said, are we allowed to think Krishna is handsome? I said, who do you want to think is handsome? So, if you're a neophyte, to become a little attached to the deity, little attached to Vrindavan, little attached to the holy name. So that is the essence of Raga. And we are meant to enter into Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga Bhakti is meant to be something that all of us enter into. You and you and you and you and you and everybody. In what lifetime? 5,000 lifetimes from now? When?
This one.
What about now? Why not? After all, we're in Vrindavan. And a few days it'll be Kartik, or if you start on the Ekadasi, it's already Kartik. What did you call it? The expanding, right? The expanding vow. Try becoming attached to Krishna. Don't be afraid of becoming attached to Krishna. We're all afraid of becoming attached to Krishna. Don't be afraid. Come attached to Krishna in any of these. In any of these. Any of these ways. Even if you're afraid of Krishna. So here there's examples given. So who's attached to Krishna? And here we're talking about the examples of the perfected devotees. So our next class, we're going to talk about how to become a Raganuga devotee. That's the next class. That'll be Tuesday afternoon. But in this class, we're looking at what is a Raganuga devotee. Before we can know how to become a Raganuga devotee, you have to know what's a Raganuga devotee. So who's attached to Krishna in lust? Gopis, what about fear?
Kamsa.
Now, important point to make here is it's not that anybody who's afraid of God or who hates God is going to become perfected. Just like we read in the Bhagavatam about Vena, King Vena. So he hated God. But he went to hell. He didn't go to the Roman Jyoti. What was the difference between Vena and Kamsa? Kamsa was killed by the world, but that wasn't all.
Kamsa was thinking about the world.
Vena was not thinking about Krishna.
Yes, Vena was not thinking about Krishna. Just blasphemy, wasn't thinking about Krishna. Just like that Pandraka. I love that story. You like that story, Pandraka?
Yes.
Such a great story. Such a great story. Where this messenger comes and says, my dear Vasudev, give up your name of Vasudev. I am the messenger of the real Vasudev. And surrender your weapons, especially your Sudarshan Chakra, you know, and take shelter of my master, Pandraka. And Krishna was laughing also. And everybody was laughing. And Krishna was laughing and he was enjoying everyone else's laughing. And he said, you tell your master that I will not give up my name, nor will I take shelter of him, but I may give up my weapon to him. So, and then they went out to the battlefield. Right? And this Pandraka, he'd gotten this benediction, I think Jiva Goswami comments this, they got the benediction from Lord Shiva that he could look something like Vishnu, but it was just fake arms. You know, it's like he just went to the costume shop and got some fake arms. Just like we do a drama, you know. and we get some crown that looks nice from a distance at night. There's a light shining on the stage, but if you go and look at the crown, it's not very nice. So we have this imitation crown and an imitation Kaustubha jewel. You know, in Krishna's Kaustubha jewel are all the living entities. That means that's where we are. But, you know, he had a fake Kaustubha jewel. And then Krishna came in and yelled at him and said, I am not going to take your shelter. Rather, you will become the food for the dogs and jackals on the battlefield. And you want my weapons, so I will give you my Sudarshan chakra to cut off your head. Right? But it's explained that because this Pandraka was meditating on Vishnu, even though he was meditating that he was Vishnu, he got Swarupya Siddhi. When Krishna killed him, his offensiveness was destroyed, and because that was his meditation. You know, there's a, your wife was asking the other day, you know, I liked your question, is this something new age, right? Not a good question. That's good. You should all be trained like that. If there's one thing you learn from my classes, then you should always ask, if you're not sure, what's your source? So there's modern psychology that say you get whatever you meditate on. Right? You've all heard about this? So they have as many courses you can... But they're right, actually. Of course, not. It's not like in Goloka Vrindavan, you just touch a desire tree and it pops up in front of you. But we do get whatever we meditate on. Not exactly the way they think, but they've got some of the right idea. So if you meditate on Krishna, you become like Krishna. Even if you're meditating in fear. You know, these bodies that we have, anybody here fully satisfied with their body? Anybody? No? Never met anybody who was. We don't look in the mirror and say, yes, exactly what I wanted. Or our whole life, right? Did we get exactly the right family, exactly the right body, exactly the right personality, everything perfect? But what did we have? It's everything we have is due to our own desires. Where is that in Bhagavad Gita? We get our senses grouped around the mind. Is that 13th chapter? 13th or 15th? I think 13th. 15th? Is it 15th? So we get our senses grouped around the mind. So depending on the position of the mind, and Prabhupada said, just like you buy clothes, you know, you buy clothes that fit your body. You don't buy clothes that are much too big or much too small. So this gross body, this gross hand, it's fitting on my subtle hand. We create our own destiny by our desires and our thoughts. You know, thoughts and desires, they're actual, they have substance. Just like sometimes people see a ghost. Correct? Right? What do the ghosts look like? Yeah, they look like they looked in their gross body. And what's the subtle body made up of? You remember the elements of the mind? It's made up of what?
Mind, intelligence, false ego.
Mind, intelligence, false ego. What's the mind? What are the three aspects of the mind?
Thinking,
feeling, and willing. So our determination, our thoughts, our emotions, they have a form. They actually have a form. Now what happens when you think about Krishna? Because in this world, if I'm thinking about a dog, then my thoughts become in the shape of a dog. And then my human body doesn't fit. Have you ever seen people who look like dogs? Yeah. One time I was in a store, I saw this one woman, she looked like an African warthog. Actually. Even dull, like her eyes looked very dull, like an animal. And now in the Western cities, I saw in London one woman who had cut her hair very short, and she dyed it like a yellow tan color, and then she also dyed like leopard spots, brown leopard spots on her hair. Yeah, that was in London. I also saw London There's also a woman who had pierced her cheeks and put silver fangs coming out of her cheeks. So even in this life, they start to look like animals. That's their gross body starts to change. And when your body doesn't fit anymore, then you get another body with that configuration. Now what happens if you think about Krishna? Now, this is quite interesting. What happens if you think about Krishna? If you're absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and you're not thinking about other things, what happens? Yes?
You see practically the thousands glow small.
Isn't that interesting? You actually see people look glowing. Yeah. Why? What's happening? What's happening in terms of the subtle body? It's getting
closer.
Closer?
Closer to the light.
Okay, but what's happening to the subtle body? It's doing what?
Transforming.
It's dissolving. Because the subtle body is made up of material thoughts and feelings. That's its form. You've read so many places in the Bhagavatam, I'm sure, that when devotees, before they leave their body and go back to Godhead, they merge all the elements of their body and mind back into the material elements. And Prabhupada says liberation means dissolution of the subtle body. So our material subtle body is made up of material desires and thoughts and feelings and plans. That's what it's made up of. All this lust, fear, envy, service, affection, kinship for something material. And that's what grows and develops our subtle body. And as we change the form of that, we get different gross bodies. But if you don't have any more material attachments and material thoughts, there's nothing to feed that subtle body anymore. Satchinanda Maharaj likes to tell that old traditional story, you know, there's two dogs fighting in my heart. And the little boy says, "Which one wins, Grandpa?" And he said, "Well, it depends which one I feed." So if you don't feed the mind and intelligence and falsely, they dissolve. And what happens with spiritual thoughts? What do they develop? They start to awaken and develop the spiritual body and the spiritual mind. So even though you appear to be inside a material body, it's like a coconut where the inside is loose. And the process for this is just to have spiritual feelings and spiritual attachments instead of material ones. That's all. It's just that simple. So these people who have these intense, it's got to be intense. It can't just be casual. It can't just be, "Oh yeah, there's Krishna, isn't he nice?" It has to be something that pulls you into absorption. So the Raghamika devotees are absorbed, and they're absorbed in these emotions. Do not discount the power of emotions in bhakti. Bhakti is talking about emotion. It's talking about intense emotion. Almost uncontrollable emotion. But not material emotion that makes you into a fool or a criminal or a crazy person. But spiritual emotion that makes you into the greatest philosopher and the most intelligent. So when we talk about Kamsa with fear, he's afraid of Krishna, the person. It's an intense attachment for Krishna, the person. It's not just fear of God. He's not just an atheist. He's not just some Darwinian scientist who's always talking against God. He's actually meditating on Krishna. And envy?
Shishupati.
And then Prabhupada talks about the Yadus. Right? So we talk about the Yadus who are thinking of Krishna as their kinship. But Prabhupada does say here also that it's spontaneous if they're thinking of kinship in love, and not spontaneous if they're thinking in regular principles. So in other words, some of the residents of Dwarka are in Vaidhi Bhava, and some are actually Raghamika devotees. And then there's a whole discussion that, well, what are we talking about? The same destination, that anyone who's absorbed in Krishna will all go to the same destination. If you hate Krishna, if you envy Krishna, or if you feel affection for Krishna, as long as it's intense and overpowering enough, then you'll all go to the same destination. So what's the explanation? Okay, yes. But what do we mean by same? Krishna or his effulgence. So why can we say that those are the same?
Energy and matter.
Hmm?
There's no difference in the energy and matter.
Yes, well, in this case, it's not exactly energy and energetic.
Actually, they may go to the same place, but the nature of love
is different. But they may sometimes also go to Vaikuntha or even Goloka. May actually sometimes. I mean, here Prabhupada's focusing on that the demons will go to the Brahma Jyoti. But some demons went to even Vrindavan, like
Putana.
That's how Gadadhar Pandit knew that Pundarik Vidyanidhi was actually a great Mahabhagavata devotee. Because Gadadhar Pandit went to see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi was living in great opulence. Is this some secret here? Oh, okay. When I was a student in school, I used to do that, but only when I was bored. So I'm wondering if I was boring you. No, okay. I remember actually when I was 12, 13. I had created sign languages. So I had one sign language for the whole class, and then I had two other sign languages just for certain girls in the class. Whenever I was bored, we would just talk to each other and ignore the teacher. And I would have a little book in my desk, and I would just read that and ignore the teacher. So because I always did that, I'm always alert if somebody's just doing that and writing notes. And then I know that I'm boring you and I need to change and do something else. So when Gadadhar Pandit went to go see Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he saw that he was living in opulence. Very nice clothes and fancy furniture and nice food. And he's thinking, what kind of Vaishnava is this? And then Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard this verse. How wonderful is Krishna that he gave the position of mother even to the she-demon Putana. And immediately he had an ecstasy. Gadadhar Pandit can understand he was actually a devotee. So Putana went to Goloka. That's incredible.
That's incredible.
It really isn't. She came to kill Krishna. Do you do that to people who try to kill you? Maybe no one's ever tried to kill you.
But
that was also an reason. How did she say this?
Isn't he enjoying that pastime and said she's...
Oh, okay, who can answer this from the definition of bhakti? Who can give the response? He said, but Krishna was also enjoying that pastime. Yes, 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 give me the argument. What's the argument? Anukulina, yes. And what's the argument? Come on, you've all got to become good enough to teach this when you're done. Anukulina, what's the description?
It should be favorable to Krishna.
Favorable to Krishna, what's the two examples?
Yashoda
and?
Kamsa.
Did Krishna enjoy killing Kamsa?
Yes.
He enjoys doing everything he does. Krishna never says, oh, that was miserable. Everything, he's always enjoying. Was Krishna happy when Mother Yasoda went to take care of the milk? Was he?
No.
He was angry. Of course he enjoyed being angry, that's another thing. But he was angry. Was Yasoda's activity bhakti? Was Kamsa's?
No.
Why?
Because he loved
him. Hmm?
Because Kamsa didn't give up everything.
Intention. You have to have a favorable intention. So it makes it bhakti is having a favorable intention, not just that Krishna enjoys it. So yes, Krishna enjoyed killing Putana, but that doesn't make it bhakti because she didn't have an intention to please Krishna. She had an intention to kill Krishna. But still, he said, well, she came with to me like a mother. The other demons, they don't do that. They just come to Krishna like an enemy, but she came to Krishna like a disguise.
Krishna enjoys fighting, not to say.
He does enjoy fighting, but it's not whether or not Krishna enjoys it, it's the intention. And because her intention was covered by this motherly behavior, yes?
Some of the demons are also devotees. They come in, I mean...
Sometimes.
Like these gatekeepers of Vaikuntha.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So they went back in the end.
Yes, sometimes. Actually, there's one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada said that only one time were those demons the gatekeepers. All the other times that Krishna comes in those incarnations are actually demons. So it's not every time. Sometimes devotees take the role of demons. Also, Jambavan, who fought with Krishna over the jewel. And it was kind of funny because he thought, oh, this jewel is so unimportant. I'll just give it to my little child like a toy. You know, if you had a jewel that could create 170 pounds of gold a day, would you just let your child play with it as a toy? So he was so detached. It's like, so what? Who needs 170 pounds of gold? He didn't care. So he was letting his child play with it, but he still was attached enough to fight with Krishna over the jewels. That was interesting. That he somehow his attachment to the material thing of the jewel clouded his ability to see that here was his Lord coming to fight with him.
In contact with the Lord is like iron and fire. So even though they came to fight, still they became their powers.
Yes, but same destination, getting back to the point, and then we're gonna take a break. So what do we mean by same destination? Why do we call it the same? Why do we say that if you become attached to Krishna, even in anger or fear, you go to the same destination as those who are attached in kinship and love and lust and affection? Yes?
It's because when we meditate on Him, it's the same thing we still dissolve our material body.
Yes. So on that, in that level, it's the same. They all get liberated.
Yeah, that's right.
But do they go exactly to the same place? With some exceptions, like Putana. Do they go exactly the same place? So someone who's absorbed in Krishna in fear and envy, where do they go? Usually. Usually they go to the Brahmajyoti. Usually. Some exceptions. Like Pandraka, he went to Vaikuntha. So there's some exceptions. But generally they go to the Brahmajyoti. So that's also where the impersonalists go. And Prabhupada makes the point, the impersonalists are like demons. Even though they're spiritualists. So why can we say the Brahmajyoti and the spiritual planets are the same?
Liberation for the material.
Okay, in that sense they're the same, yeah? Some other thoughts?
Spiritual.
It's all spiritual?
Krishna is absolute, so it's Brahmajyoti is Krishna.
Yes, actually Krishna. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaneti, Sajjate. It's actually all Krishna, but also different. So, Achintaveda Veda Tattva is one of different. By the way, Achintaveda Veda Tattva does not apply to Krishna's expansions, his personal expansions. Achintaveda Veda Tattva does not apply to Krishna Balaram or Krishna Nrisimhadeva. But it applies to Krishna and Paramatma, Krishna and Brahman, Krishna and Shiva, Krishna and Maya, Krishna and the living entities. So in one sense you can say they have the same destination because to go to the Brahmajyoti and to go to Goloka or to go to Vaikuntha is all spiritual, and in another sense it's not exactly the same. Yes?
What was that?
It
wasn't, you can't use that particular way to talk about
with Vishnu Tattva, personal forms. Why not?
So they're not one and...
They're not one and different, no. They're only...
One.
One.
Oh.
They're only one. Yes? Otherwise, there'd be many gods.
The reason Putana liberated Goloka is because of the previous incarnation that she had a very strong desire to be the mother of.
Yeah, that's also part of it.
That's
certainly also part of it.
So, is it only the reason? reason of this exception?
Oh, I don't know. You have to ask Krishna that. You have to talk to him. Krishna, why did you make that exception for Putana? And I'm sure it had something to do with her last life and something to do with how she approached him in this life. That's how it's explained, that because in that time she approached him as a mother, even though her intentions were evil. Whereas some of the other demons, they didn't approach Krishna like that. But we hear also, like, the Acharyas explain about Agasura, that he entered into Krishna's body, but then after that he took a Vaikuntha form and went to Vaikuntha. And that's why Lord Brahma came down, because he saw this airplane going to Vaikuntha past his planet. Actually, first he heard a party going on in the other higher planets, like you may hear your neighbors having a party. Right? Now that Kartik is starting, we're hearing chanting all night. Well, it went from being quiet at night to being, at least they're not playing Bollywood songs. So they're hearing the chanting at night. So Lord Brahma heard this party going on, and he went to investigate, and he sees that there's this being going to Vaikuntha, who was a Agasura. He was astonished, so he came to Earth to check it out. So some of the other demons also get that kind of form. Okay, please take a 10-minute break. Thank you.